Hey everyone, this is Shomani Tutanka. I'm just coming to you before the episode, just to explain a couple things that we're going to be doing a little bit differently and to issue the trigger warning. First, for our cousins, we're going to be talking about genocide. Unfortunately, we're going to be talking about some ICE. We're going to be talking about ICE movements and some projects they're doing to monitor some people. Then we're also going to be talking about there's some mentions of rape and some other heavier topics. So I'm just letting everybody know that it's a really upsetting episode. Whew. Anyway, that being said, we have special guests joining us at the end of the episode, so stay tuned through the music at the end. We're kind of trying to do this to encourage people to listen to Indigenous artists a little bit more. We'll put the artist and the song in the description, as well as where you can find our new core member, where you can find some of their work. That being said, on with the show. We are the bands of Turtle Island.
My name is Pia Gigi, or Wayne.
And I am Shungmane Tutanka, or Wolf. Like we said in the last episode, we're going to be sticking to the actual Lakota rather than the English translations for our friends. Mm-hmm. You know who you are, friends. You can still call us, you know, whatever, but we'd prefer the actual Lakota. Today, yeah. What are we talking about today?
Today we are going to be talking about some breaking news regarding ICE and some happenings at the border and with a tribe down in Arizona.
And then after that, we're going to be talking about Brazil. And everybody, I think, knows that there's a bunch of shit going on in Brazil. But I knew,
oh, yeah.
I've been planning this episode before those fires happened, and now I have to incorporate it. So it was supposed to be a Mauna Kea episode, if you guys remember us promising that. It's supposed to be Mauna Kea and Brazil. Well, turns out, no, we got to separate the episodes because Brazil became its own little thing. And so then we're going to do a little story about ICE and the borders, which I guess we'll go over now, you know. So this comes from The Intercept. It's by Will Parrish. It was 8 days ago it came out. And so we're going to read it, like some paragraphs, analyze those paragraphs, and just go over the important parts of the article. You know, the link will be in the show notes. So let's get started.
So the article is titled, "The U.S. Border Patrol and an Israeli Military Contractor Are Putting a Native American Reservation Under Persistent Surveillance."
I think we could all agree there is some huge implications here.
On the southwestern end of the Tohono O'odham. Getting off to such a good start, too.
Thank God I could just edit it all. Smooth.
On the southwestern end of the Tohono O'odham Nation's reservation, roughly 1 mile from a barbed wire barrier or barricade marking Arizona's border with the Mexican state of Sonora, Ofelia Rivas leads me to the base of a hill overlooking her home. A U.S. Border Patrol truck is parked roughly 200 yards upslope. A small black mast mounted with cameras and sensors is positioned on a trailer hitched to the truck. For Rivas, the Border Patrol's monitoring of the reservation has been a grim aspect of everyday life, and that surveillance is about to become far more intrusive. The vehicle is parked where U.S. Customs and Border Protection will soon construct a 160-foot surveillance tower capable of continuously monitoring every person and vehicle within a radius of up to 7.5 miles. The tower will be outfitted with a high-definition camera with night vision, thermal sensors, and ground-sweeping radar, all of which feed real-time data to Border Patrol agents at a central operating station in Ajo, Arizona. The system will store an archive with the ability to rewind and track individuals' movements across time, an ability known as Wide Area Persistent Surveillance, CBP, plans 10 of these towers across the Tohono O'odham Reservation, which spans an area roughly the size of Connecticut. Two will be located near residential areas, including Rivas's neighborhood, which is home to about 50 people. To build them, CBP has entered a $226 million contract with the U.S. Division of Elbit Systems, Israel's largest military company.
So, three paragraphs in, and it's already fucked beyond belief. The people who are currently building a wall into the ground at Gaza are the same people about to start monitoring Native American reservations.
Mm-hmm.
And $26 million contract. I get why the CBP, like, why they want to invest in it. It's cheaper than building a wall across the entire freaking border, you know? And you look at it, and it's just like, imagine how those people feel. It's like when, do you remember when, I don't know if what you were doing back then, when Edward Snowden broke the NSA stuff, like about surveilling everybody?
I think so, yes.
So at that time, I was selling weed.
Oh.
And I got sketched the fuck out because I'm like a teenager. I moved out of my house early and stuff like that. And so like I'm using weed to support myself. And now they're watching my phone. That's the most terrifying idea I've ever heard in my life. It's like the idea that God's watching you, you know?
And then not to mention like how revolutionary circles take place online.
Oh yeah. Well see, I wasn't there yet. I was just like a lumpen proletarian. So. But yeah, no, exactly. Like now it's like they know what we're saying. We're not hiding anything. It's just a matter of when we propose a threat. Wait, no. When we pose a threat. There we go. When we pose a threat, they're going to crack down on us. And so we need alternative forms of communication. I, for one, am getting a ham radio. So that way
My partner wants to get one, too.
I'd highly recommend it because, first off, we should stay in contact in case stuff starts going down.
True. You know?
The fact that we're on a podcast means we're going to be a voice silenced, right?
Yes.
I mean, and that's like all very paranoia, but you know, if we're just going by how history goes, it's pretty obvious that things like Revolutionary Left Radio are going to get shut down as soon as a fascist gets in control. And I'm not saying we're anywhere near the equivalent, but we are for the exact demographic that this article is going to go on to explain how pissing their pants the government is about Native Americans. Let us continue.
Yes.
Tohono O'odham people used to move freely across these lands, Rivas says. But following years of harassment by Border Patrol agents, many are afraid to venture far from their homes. Now we won't be able to go anywhere near here without the big U.S.-Israeli eyes monitoring us, watching our every move, she says. Fueled by the growing demonization of migrants, as well as ongoing fears of foreign terrorism, the U.S. borderlands have become laboratories for new systems of enforcement and control. First-hand reporting, interviews, and a review of documents for this story provide a window into the high-tech surveillance apparatus that CBP is building in the name of deterring illicit migration, and highlight how these same systems often end up targeting other marginalized populations as well as political dissidents. And sometimes, this is just me, to clarify, this is just me adding a little note, and sometimes the two overlap.
Yes.
So the towers in Tohono O'odham land are part of a surge in wide area persistent surveillance systems across the borderlands. And so basically what a wide area persistent surveillance system is it's supposed to be able to use algorithms to track where people are most likely supposed to go. And so people want to implement these towers in Baltimore, Detroit, and large crime areas as well, so they can start tracking everybody. And the Democrats are saying that this is the better alternative to Trump's border wall, a virtual wall.
That's not okay.
No, and Elbit Systems of America, you know, their American branch, has already built 55 of these huge towers. And continuing, they have 368 smaller towers called RVSS towers that range from San Diego to the Rio Grande Valley. And also parts of the Canadian border.
Mm-hmm.
That's terrifying. And civil rights advocates and stuff are in an uproar about it, of course. You know, according to Jay Stanley, senior policy analyst of the American Civil Rights Liberties Union Speech, Privacy, and Technology Project, the spread of persistent surveillance technology is particularly worrisome because they remove any limit on how much information police can gather on a person's movements. The border is the natural place for the government to start using them, since there is much more public support to deploy these sorts of intrusive technologies there, he said. And, you know, everybody's worried about the idea of Big Brother watching you. Well, it's happening, you know.
Yeah.
Back in like 2015, I guess, Trump was calling for the construction of a big, beautiful wall along the U.S.-Mexico mm-hmm. border. But now there's an idea of a virtual wall. And it and the fact that they've switched from like the 2006 idea of building a fence, which Bill Clinton started, actually. He started the whole fence thing. And it's Democrats started the shit.
Not surprised.
No, it's awful. Like, anyway, okay, we'll get into that another time. I don't like to only shit on Democrats because it makes me sound reactionary. I like to shit on Democrats because they always like to try to be the Indians' friend, you know?
Yeah.
It pisses me the fuck off. With Liz Warren. So, a key component of the effort known as SBI Net was canceled after 5 years and more than $1 billion in expenditures. In the wake of that failure, CBP turned to Elbit, based in Haifa, Israel, awarding it a $145 million contract in 2014 to develop the integrated fixed towers in southern Arizona, in addition to fixed and mobile surveillance towers. That's what they're saying. There we go. Other technology that CBP has acquired and deployed includes blimps outfitted with high-powered ground and air radar, sensors buried underground. And
blimps?
They have sensors buried underground and facial recognition software at ports of entry. So they're scanning everybody's face as they come in. CBP's drone fleet has been described as the largest of any U.S. agency outside of the Department of Defense. So Border Patrol has its own fleet of freaking drones. The surveillance has had an acute impact on borderland communities, including on the Tohono O'odham Reservation. Drones fly overhead and motion sensors track foot traffic. CBP checkpoints monitor people traveling between the reservation and cities such as Tucson and Phoenix. Vehicle barriers, surveillance cameras, and trucks have appeared near burial grounds and on hilltops amid ancient Seguro Forest, which are sacred to people on the reservation. Nelly Joe David, a Tohono O'odham tribal member who is writing her dissertation on border security issues at the University of Arizona, says many younger people who have been forced by economic circumstances to work in nearby cities are returning home less and less because they want to avoid the constant surveillance and harassment. It is especially taking a toll on our younger generations. This is continued forced integration. Is. This is continued.
It is.
This is genocide. You know,
with the line about the trucks showing up at sacred places like burial grounds and the forest, it's just like, you really don't want us to engage with that stuff.
And you know what's worse? The reason why the U.S. went with Elbit Systems is the fact that they have products that are field-proven on Palestinians.
Jesus Christ.
You know, that's why they hired these. These people are experts in genocide. Like, I'm getting really emotional now. But they are experts in killing off people systematically. And they're doing it once again. And... you know, people think that this conversation is only about Mexicans, you know? No.
It's not.
It's about every marginalized group being demonized mm-hmm. amongst the general population.
It's horrifying that we have this technology that can be used in such a violent way.
And so something that's even more terrifying is in 2015, when Trump was talking about expanding this virtual wall, it is known that Border Patrol shares its aircraft with other law enforcement agencies. And some of these flight logs, which The Intercept obtained via the Freedom of Information Act between July 26th and August 2017, between July 2016 and August 2017, Border Patrol conducted 15 drone flights for state and local police spanning 90 hours and additional 53 flights for federal police, which covered more than 200 hours. And on top of that, some of these were a part of the Dakota Access Pipeline protests. They saw what was happening. They saw the revolutionary potential in our people. They saw what threat we present to them by having such a strong claim in everybody's eyes as soon as you take into material and historical conditions. This land is our land. And they know it. That's why Brazil...
And they're scared.
They're terrified. That's why Brazil's doing the same shit it's doing. That's why Palestine is occupied currently. That's why Canada does this shit. Mexico does this shit. Freaking any settler colonial society does this crap. Norway, they do this. They systematically kill off caribou because that's what the people eat. That's what their native people eat. And despite popular belief, yes, there are indigenous people in Europe that are not white. They are like us, you know. They just want to be a part of the land. This isn't to say there's some, I don't know, I guess like racial like connection. It's to say that we all have a similar belief of protecting the land and we are all colonized peoples. We all just want our own freedom. We all just want self-determination and the ability to go back to the way our people lived, you know?
Because we didn't live like this.
No. And we definitely didn't live with 200-foot towers monitoring our every move, you know?
Yeah.
It's why the fact that white people enforce... I'm sorry, not all. It's not all white people. But well, let's be honest. It's white people.
Yes. White people benefit from it either way.
Yeah, yeah. It's white. And so I think this is a good time to make a huge distinction. Any colonized person that sides with the white man has relinquished his indigeneity and agreed to be the wretched of the earth, the one who sells out his own kind. The one who sits there and forces them into their subjugation, their oppression, and forces them to continue saying, but look at what great things they brought us. It reminds me of the Monty Python bit where they go, All right, besides for the aqueducts, the roads, and peace, what have the Romans given us? You know, it's a justification yeah. for imperialism, and that's all it ever is, and it's our own people doing it, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, stuff like, I always go back to the, I feel bad for always shitting on the Cherokee slavery thing, so I'll use a different example. Actually, the people we're covering right now, they helped mm-hmm. kill, they helped the U.S. government kill a bunch of Apaches in a, I think it's the like Camp Gavin or something like that, massacre.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think they, you know, that's in the past, of course, but they were trying to survive. That's why they did mm-hmm. it. They knew that the U.S. would have killed them if they didn't help kill the Apaches, you know? Yeah. And so over and over in history, we're forced against one another.
And we need to be able to stand together.
That's the only way that it works. There's the Shawnee and
Tecumseh?
Yeah, Tecumseh. So Tecumseh went and tried to do this. He tried to unite the tribes, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it was one of the most impressive federations, and the Sioux would go on to do it and defeat the 7th Cavalry, you know?
Yeah.
It's only when we come together that we have any chance to stand against imperialism and colonization, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That being said, we're gonna take a little break and say a little joke.
Okay. This is an excerpt from the book Custer Died for Your Sins by Vine Deloria Jr. And it's from the chapter Indian Humor.
Okay.
In the Southwest, Indians like to talk about a similar play on words. One favorite story concerns a time when the Apaches and the settlers were fighting it out for control of Arizona Territory. The chief of one Apache band was the last one needed to sign the peace treaty. Scout after scout had urged him to sign so the territory could have peace, but to no avail. One day, the chief took sick, and because he realized his days were numbered, he called his three sons together and made them pledge not to make peace unless all three signed the treaty. Soon after that, the old man died and his three sons, Deerfoot, Running Bear, and Falling Rocks, all left to seek their fortunes with portions of the original band. Scouts quickly found Deerfoot and Running Bear and convinced them they should sign the treaty, but they were unable to find Falling Rocks. Years went by, and everyone in the territory sought the missing band so that the treaty could be concluded. Falling Rocks could not be found. Eventually, everyone gave up except the State Highway Department. They continued looking for him. And that is why today, as you drive through the mountain passes in Arizona, you will see large signs that read, "Look out for Falling Rocks."
I love it! I love it!
I love that native jokes tell a story.
Well, we're a storytelling people.
True.
I love it.
It fits too because we're talking about the Arizona area.
Honestly, yeah. I thought because this is actually about the people. Like, we were talking about the people, and I even brought up the massacre and everything. Like,
yeah.
That oddly fit. I love Deloria. Such an influence. I read so much crap.
mm-hmm.
They're involved in so many things. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
So let's continue on to Brazil.
Yeah,
we had a different breaking news for Brazil we were gonna tell, but now that's a little more of the historical conditions we'll cover. Right now, everybody knows it. 19% of the Brazilian Amazon forest is on fucking fire. It is mm-hmm. burning up. It is lit, dog. It is goddamn awful that this is happening. We're gonna freaking die, first off.
Yeah.
Well, this all started 5 days ago? About 6 days ago?
I think so. Something like that.
And nobody knows why the fire started. Bolsonaro will tell you that Evo Morales is the one who started them. He started them to blame Brazil. The socialists did it. Go figure. And for those of you who don't know who Bolsonaro is the fascist president of Brazil.
He looks like a walking corpse.
If none of you know what this guy looks like, you got to go look him up. He's ugly. He's got the biggest bags under his eyes.
He looks like a corpse.
He literally does. He looks like, have you seen pictures of Bush Senior?
No, I haven't.
He looks like a decrepit gremlin now. Bolsonaro looks like he's about to become that.
Oh, no.
When he ran for president while there was a soft coup going on, he got stabbed because of his policy promises. And one of the policy promises was, I demarcate indigenous land. Not a minister. I am the boss. In this matter, among many others, I am a president who takes on lions and bonuses.
Jeez.
He also said, where there is indigenous land, there is wealth, and I plan on seizing it. Whew. He also said, the slightest Afro descendant where weighed 7 arrobas, which is an old unit of measurement mainly used for livestock, they do not do anything, and I do not think they even serve to procreate anymore. More than $1 billion a year is spent on them. If that's not a clear, indication for how fucking horrible this guy is, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. You're not living in reality. Seriously. Yeah.
This is an awful human being. Like,
complete utter trash.
Worst of the worst.
On par with Mussolini and Hitler.
Absolutely.
If you're willing to call Trump the new Hitler, what the fuck is Bolsonaro? What is he? He's Mecca Hitler. Like,
yeah.
He's worse than Trump. He is. It's just that he doesn't have as big of an army as Trump. So economically, yeah. Trump holds more power, but Bolsonaro is just overall a worse human being. I can only imagine, because he also said things like, you can watch the Rev Left episode on more on Bolsonaro, because we're going to stop talking about him after this. But Bolsonaro also said things like he would kill his sons if they were gay. And he also raised them to know not to date a black woman.
Jeez.
Yeah, this guy.
So this guy is xenophobic. He is
sexist, misogynistic.
Racist, like.
Just, there's so many. He's a monster. I'm not a big dehumanizer, but this man is not human. Okay.
Yeah.
He can die, though. Satirically, huh? But most people. So at the time I started planning for this, there was a huge thing about Glenn Greenwald being threatened on July 24th with prison for his unfavorable views of Bolsonaro. But I mainly want to talk about is how these fires happen. Who gives a shit about Glenn Greenwald? He's white. I mean, sure, free speech or whatever, but what does it fucking matter when one guy from Brazil was willing to go and talk to the native Yane people? They call themselves Wiyane, but they're designated Wahipi by the government. And it's a very homogenized idea, because these people, rather than seeing themselves as this broader group and stuff in Amape, that's the province, the state which they're in, and where the reservation's in, rather than seeing themselves as cousins with the rest, as family with everybody, they consider themselves distinct, And as fellow indigenous people, we're going to respect that. We're not going to call them cousins, okay? But they are fellow indigenous people who are also colonized, and we have that kinship rather than familiarity I guess, so to say. It's a kinship. I don't know. I guess it's semantics at this point. But I kind of wanted to address how they view themselves. On July 24th, the leader of the ENA was assassinated. He was literally assassinated by what they report was a group of 12 to 15 heavily armed invaders. But according to The Guardian, it's just merely miners. It's just miners invading. Dozens of gold miners have invaded a remote indigenous reserve in the Brazilian Amazon, where a local leader was stabbed to death and have taken over the village after the community fled in fear, local politicians and indigenous leaders said. The authorities said police were on their way to investigate. And let me explain how you get there. You have to go by car ride, like private car. You have to have a private car. Then you have to go on a boat. And then you have to walk.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way to get there. So where I get my news from on Brazil is from a Brazilian magazine, and so I'm learning Portuguese right now, as well as Lakota, and I don't know, Portuguese is kind of easier, but I guess that's the European assimilation there.
Yeah.
But it's called The Leaf of St. Paul, St. Paul. I get it from the Leaf of St. Paulo in English. I can't tell you the Portuguese, but when they went there, when they asked other tribes and stuff around the area about what's going on, and there's many tribes around the area reporting the same thing, their estimates are as high as 20,000. And they're all reported with heavy weaponry that is high caliber and looks very professional. And all of a sudden, after these invasions are happening, after they're making the people who are in the jungle flee, the forest starts on fire. And Brazil does nothing about it until G7 offers them money. In which case, Brazil refuses that money.
Yeah.
Because Macron said something about his wife or something. Bolsonaro's wife. I don't know. It was something dumb. It was utterly dumb. And Bolsonaro would rather let the forest burn so that way they can clear the land easy and institute more soy and cattle farms.
Yeah.
What's worse is our president is great friends with one of the top financiers of this deforestation drive.
Yeah.
It is two Brazilian firms, both owned by Blackstone. Okay. And Blackstone is a major U.S. investment firm that had heavy ties to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and President Donald J. Trump. Okay. These people are on the same side. Big business says it's committed to helping fascism. You know, Blackstone's official statement is it is committed to responsible environmental stewardship. This focus and dedication is embedded in every investment decision we make and guides how we conduct ourselves as operators. In this instance, while we do not have operating control, we know the company has made a significant reduction in overall carbon emissions through lower congestion and allowed the more efficient flow of agricultural goods of Brazilian farmers. Listen to that spin. What they're talking about is that they installed a highway between the port on there's a port on the the Amazon River in the state of Mato Grosso, and it's on the Highway 163. It is Highway 163. but this road, what it does is it allows a streamline between farms at the edge of the jungle to the river in the middle of the jungle. And all of a sudden, conveniently, more land is opening up towards the river. It just conveniently happened that way. after 20,000 invaders went into the land with high caliber weapons. And, you know.
Very convenient.
Yeah. Weird. Huh. So anyway.
Funny how that works.
So, yeah, it's in the town of Miritituba. Maybe I said that right. Who knows? But this is like, and it's like a 300 mile highway. It's huge. It's freaking huge. And all the forests like are receding perfectly to accommodate that highway. Like it's supposed to be able to ship like 13 million tons more efficiently, which, yes, will cut the carbon emissions. But unfortunately, they're taking out one of the key components in the system to help with carbon emissions.
Yeah.
It's the same idea as farming the frickin' Great Plains. Plains are one of the best carbon sinks. The Amazon forest, Amazon rainforest is the last great carbon sink. And yeah. Both of one's already destroyed beyond belief, basically, and the other one is on fire. And they're planning on doubling that shipping capacity. Whether that means expanding the highway or what, we don't know. You know, so either way, their carbon emissions are going to double and possibly even triple because they're destroying the one thing that's eating them so quickly.
Yeah.
We have an article from The Intercept, which is where I got this information on Blackstone. They say, with Bolsonaro, the invasions are worse and will continue to get worse. That's from Francisco Umanari, a 42-year-old Uparina chief. And he told Alexander Zaychik, which we'll link to that story so you can go read about it yourself, I guess. We just don't have the time to cover it. We wanted to keep this episode a little shorter than the last two. But Bolsonaro initially dismissed the fires as unworthy of serious intention. Several weeks ago, Bolsonaro fired a chief government scientist for a report on the rapid escalation of deforestation under Bolsonaro's administration, claiming that the numbers were fabricated.
Olha o que eles fizeram com a nossa reserva. 2 anos que a gente tava lutando pra preservar isso aqui. E agora vem os baderneiros e pica fogo na nossa aldeia. Se não bastasse a Vale matar nosso rio, matar os nossos pontos de vida, agora vieram e puseram fogo na nossa reserva. Nós não vamos nos calar. Amanhã nós vamos fechar a pista e queremos a mídia aqui pra nos defender.
Jesus.
Literally. The ultimate fake news guy.
Yeah.
Beginning with the military dictatorship in Brazil, and agribusiness was fully empowered, roughly a fifth of the jungle was destroyed by the mid-2000s. If the Amazon loses another fifth of its mass, it is at risk of a phenomenon known as dieback, where the forest becomes so dry that a vicious cascading cycle takes over and it becomes Zaychik writes, beyond the reach of any subsequent human intervention or regret.
So pretty much if we lose another fifth of the Amazon, we're fucked.
Yeah. Yeah. And so you guys can know who the people are, because these people are real. They have names. And we could do something about them. They have addresses. All right. Hint. Hint. Huh? Let's go send them a gift basket and ask them to change things, right? Quink. So, Steve Schwartzman is the founder of the Blackstone Group. Okay. He is generously given $2.5 million to Mitch McConnell and put Jim Bayer, McConnell's billionaire brother-in-law, on the board of Blackstone. 2 years later, Schwartzman kicked in an $8 million to McConnell's super PAC. Then he also gave office made $786 million last year. And looks like they gave they went to the frickin' $100,000 a plate fundraiser for Trump. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And Trump slashed the top percentage rate in the final package for him from almost 40% to 37%.
Jeez.
So I'm not really sure how the packages went or what they included, but he gave the guy a discount. Yeah. So
and this guy pretty much has Trump and McConnell in his pocket.
Yeah, seriously, Mitch McConnell, Mitch McConnell has been shutting down as many green things as possible. Mm-hmm. And that really shows you where this lies.
Yes.
So in defense of the project, a Blackstone spokesperson noted that it had been approved by the International Finance Corporation, the IFC, an affiliate to the World Bank, and the IFC had determined that the project would in fact reduce carbon emissions. So, not only is the IFC involved, but the IFC, which is a literal tool for the CIA, and i.e. American imperialism, capitalist imperialism. It's capitalism. It's a cross the world thing of capitalists. If you're looking for your conspiracy cabal, it's the rich people. I don't care who they are. They all have class interests that are not aligned with ours and will ultimately betray the proletariat. That means they will betray Indians like they've done forever and ever and are still doing today. So, with this story out of the way and that breaking news covered, I think Piagigi and I are going to just talk more friendly at this end and just talk about our upcoming stuff.
Yeah.
Because, damn, that's depressing.
Yeah, it's a really heavy episode, and we definitely need stuff to break it up. Not only for listeners, but for us too.
Honestly, so we had a short 15-minute interval between the first section and the Brazilian section, and it is so hard not to almost cry about this. I think it's Che Guevara that says, "If you shake with indignation at every injustice in the world, then you are a comrade of mine." And I'm fucking livid right now and shaking beyond belief. Today, what we're recording is the anniversary of Vietnamese independence. So hooray, down with colonialism.
Yeah.
It is also the death of Ho Chi Minh. It's the anniversary of his death, which I think is oddly fitting that when they declared independence, he also died.
Mm-hmm.
Our next Turtle Talk episode, we're going to be talking about Monarchia. Is that right?
Yeah.
How would you say the research for that's going?
It's going pretty good. A little bit slow, just
busy.
Work and being exhausted from working on my feet all day.
Yeah. See, for those of you who don't know, I have more days off than Piagigi, so that's why I plan most of the episodes. I get to relax a lot more, and I have an easier job. I only have to use a deli slicer sometimes.
I work in a deli serving salads and then also cutting up meat. And it's the meat side of the deli is busier. So whenever I'm over there, it's like a constant flow of people.
Do you whoop your partner in what's it called? Arm wrestling?
I've never tried.
I feel like you probably have some strong delts.
I have been getting a bit more muscle from this job before, but it's so exhausting.
Every time I have to slice pepperoni because we make pizzas, we end up, I end up having really bad muscles swell in my arm. I'm just
yeah.
I wish it would stop flexing. And then my arms are just sort of like stiff all day, and then they hurt the next day, and it's just, it's awful. We started a Patreon. Go donate to that if you want. We're just using it to get books and eventually pay for a domain and stuff like that for our website. What else? Ooh, we have some super awesome collaborations in the pipeline.
Yeah.
And I think I am willing to announce them. And I'm sorry, Brett, if you're listening, and I wasn't supposed to announce this yet, but we will be doing a collaboration with Revolutionary Left Radio.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fucking awesome. I think we're doing it on Sitting Bull. Brett and I are still planning it out. Oh, it's going to be a few months down the line, but it's coming. And that's going to be cool. So don't ask us about it, but it is coming. as far as more immediate projects go, our next episode is going to be on the Dawes Act, Indian Reorganization Act, and Indian Termination Policies.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, we have an interview that's also going to be coming out after our Mauna Kea episode. That's an interview, like a round table with some cousins of ours. We'll put their links and stuff to check out their work before that episode comes out. We're planning on doing everything. We're going to try to start getting towards a more regular schedule even. And we're also going to be trying to get some more people involved, so that way it's not me and P just trying to get everything planned in our 2 to 3 days off. It's pretty rough. I don't know. I'm good at it, but it's a lot of reading, and I'd like to have more episodes available. As well as the direction I want to go with this is I kind of want more cousins to come on and showcase their ideas, and we'll even, like, we'll keep the history, and then the Turtle Talk will divulge into more of everyone's ideas rather than what's historically accurate. So I think that's, like, sort of, the Turtle Talk allows us to do, like, a more creative vision, I think, you know. Also, I learned that there's a news website called Turtle Talk. So,
oh yeah,
hey, we follow them
on
Twitter.
How's it going?
I saw their name and I was like, sure, yeah. I use your name. It's cool.
Please don't sue us.
Please don't sue us. Other than that, is there? Oh. We have 300 views on each of the episodes, which, thank you guys. That's awesome.
Oh, dang.
That's more Twitter followers than
really
we
have. Really great.
Yeah. So that means people who don't follow us on Twitter know about us. That's cool.
Yeah. And we will be working on transcripts for episodes to put on our website.
Honestly, I've been procrastinating. So bad.
It's just been a little slow going because, again, we are only two people right now.
Well, see, that's like, so we have a call with a cousin today, and we're going to see if how they're able to help and if they'd be willing to do the transcripts. Or
if somebody is willing to
transcript them.
Put in that work and then email it to us. I can upload it to the website.
And then we'll shout you out every episode. Whatever you want us to shout out, dude, we'll shout out. All right? Whoever's listening and decides to do this, if anybody decides to do it, we'll shout you out every single episode. Actually, you can even come on.
Yeah.
You can be white. You'll be the only white person allowed on.
Token white person.
Token white person. And I think with that one, we're gonna end the episode. I just wanted to say Tosha, and did you want to give the official goodbye?
Sure. Tanya Omani Yelo.
Hey guys, you know, sorry about doing this weird. I know we don't usually do a post-credit thing, but in editing, I realized I forgot to mention that there's a new project I'm going to be starring on for their launch episode that you can learn more about Brazil. So it kind of coincides with this episode called the People's Liberation Podcast or Climate Liberation Podcast. It's going to release hopefully within the next month. Oh! Somebody's here. Hold on.
Yeah?
Oh, hey. I'm here to record the podcast. Y'all ready?
P already left. You're a bit late.
Oh, man.
So this is another thing I think you guys saw on Twitter that I announced we had a new member of the core team. And this is Owen. He's from Alaska. And Tinglet, am I saying that right? Tinglet?
No, you're not.
Oh, okay.
You might know me as the Klinget comrade on the Discord, but I'm Owen. I am Klinget from the southeast part of Alaska.
And so,
hello.
So, like, as far as like that area goes, like, would you be grouped in with like just for like the settlers and stuff, so they can kind of get an idea of like the diversity up there? Like, what groups are up there?
All right, yeah, so good point. A lot of times you say Alaska and people think Eskimo.
Inuit, yeah. Eskimo, whatever is not politically incorrect.
Whatever is incorrect is what they think of. And and we're actually, we're probably, I mean, culturally, we're more similar to the Pacific Northwest peoples of Washington State, British Columbia. And we share a lot of art elements with them, so that's us. We live on the coast. We're all about salmon, man.
Salmon. I love salmon, like some good old smoked salmon.
That's it.
How, like, do you ever go salmon fishing? Are you a fisherman? Or
okay, now I am personally not. My kind of youthful rebellion was like, Dad, I don't want to go fishing. I want to stay home and read comic books and play computer games.
Oof.
And now I'm like, damn, I need to learn how to do all of that stuff that I like ignored as a kid.
Right. That's always like the toughest part. Like I was like that up until like 12, maybe 13. And then, like, I started, my family was, like, Christians, and then I got, like, that was my rebellion.
Yeah,
was atheist. Like, I went full-on atheist. I was like, no, this is bullshit. You know, it's, like, me trying to decolonize myself. I'm like, I'm an Indian. I do not believe in your fucking white God. So that's how, like, it all started. And then I went homeless for a while. And, like, every summer I was doing these survival camps just, like, to do something in the summer because my dad kicked me out of the house and didn't want me there, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, like, I ended up, like, learning how to, like, survive out in the woods for a while. Like, I lived out in an igloo for 3 months. It was pretty lit. So today, I brought you, like, since you're here, you know, we might as well talk about something in native news. Dior.
Yeah, let's scrape the bottom of the barrel.
Yeah, just straight up. Dior Sauvage. I don't know how to speak
French. Yeah, I don't know how to speak French. It's
Sauvage.
Like impossible to know how to pronounce the word. It's impossible to know what the word means. It's impossible to know if the word is offensive.
Yeah, you know, something about Sauvage is just totally obscured from any...
Suave? Suavage?
Suavage? Yeah, that's what it is. We're sophisticated. So for those of you who don't know, Johnny Depp, that racist piece of shit, fucking released a new cologne called Sauvage in French. and says because he used the French word, it's non-offensive. That's what they originally said at first. And then now, about a week later, they're backpedaling, saying, no, we were trying to raise awareness about political incorrectness.
Oh, shoot, I missed that one.
Oh, yeah.
I missed the follow-up.
Oh, yeah. I saw that, and I was like, oh, okay, cool. I just thought...
So, this perfume company is out there being an provocateur.
Yeah,
trying to...
exactly, a provocateur.
Okay.
But yeah, no, they're freaking ridiculous, and Johnny Depp's leading the charge, and all the white people on Twitter are who are obsessed with Johnny Depp for whatever reason.
I know, God.
Nothing like being obsessed with an abuser, right?
I mean, he looks like a skeleton at this point.
Honestly, I don't
just even... watch his old movies.
Just go watch 21 Jump Street, and then realized, holy crap, this guy shouldn't ever have gotten famous, and then give up on all hope for humanity, like we have. That's a joke. Don't give up hope.
No.
But
don't have hope in these people.
No, that's for sure. If they're white, good rule of thumb. Don't trust them.
If they're out to make money, then you can trust them to make money.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep, and that's it.
So, you know, this actually brings up an interesting discussion, as long as we're on the topics of like profiteering. Like, how does your tribe feel about I'm assuming it's similar.
Oh, ouch, you're hurting me right now.
Like, are you well, no, not that you're into profiteering.
Because, okay,
I'm saying
you don't know why I say that, though, is because Alaska is unique for a lot of reasons, and one of the reasons that we are unique is that you know, we're at the far end of the colonial push westward. And I don't know if they're kind of running out of people or not enough people wanted to live in Alaska or it wasn't sustainable or whatever. For whatever reason, we didn't get as many as other places did. We didn't get pushed off of our land the same way that our cousins down in the lower 48 in Canada did. And as a result, like, these settlers have to face the fact that none of the land issues were ever resolved, right?
Yeah.
So the attempt to settle that and to get the natives to shut up, I imagine, is the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act of 1971, I believe.
Oh, wow.
And what that did was it broke Alaska into corporate entities. And the tribes got affiliated with one of these ANCSA corporations. And so mine is called Sea Alaska. And they are the most visible face of indigeneity in the area. And they're a fucking corporation.
Oh.
They are doing my people's business.
Is this like redwashing?
But they're making,
would this
they're
be
making
redwashing?
Money. I don't know. But they're making money. Like, these corporations will make money just like settler corporations. We've got money, subsidiary holdings in child detention at the border.
What?
Like, come on.
Wait, you have your own detention facilities for children?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, they're like subcontractors that that do the logistical work of maintaining those facilities.
But they're under like the public face, like the corporate tribe, basically. How you describe
it. I mean,
it.
It's buried in enough layers that it's not like, hey, we're the Sea Alaska genocide enablers, you know, like
Is it a lot like the boarding schools, or like is it more
no,
like
this
ICE?
Is just the immigrants coming across the border that are getting locked up.
It's just straight up ICE in Alaska. That's fucked up.
No. It's at like the Texas border.
Oh, you're
like
talking
national.
About here.
I'm talking about national child detention. Like,
okay.
Yeah.
But no, wait, no, they're under just your tribe's company?
Some of the not the tribe.
Not the tribe, but like the tribe.
This gets mixed up all the time, is that the corporations are not the tribe. We do have a tribal government that is like,
okay,
that does represent us. The corporations, the shareholders are the, like me, right? Those
okay.
are just the people. And that's complicated and tied to blood quantum and is also not great.
I get it.
I don't know. It, you know, you could probably do a whole episode just on ANCSA and like, because like, you know, these kinds of land settlements are complicated and long-reaching effects and all of that.
Well, it's like our Fort Laramie episode. I think it was GCOM in the Discord server, the Proles Discord. They were saying, like, oh, I thought the Potawatomi didn't lose their land until, like, this date. And I was like, well, this is what you don't understand about settlers. They didn't care who else occupied the land. They made one deal with that tribe, said that land was theirs, and when the tribe tried to come, when a different tribe tried to come in and say, hey, this is our land, you know, we rotate out, we're nomads.
Yeah, right.
They were
no,
like,
we bought it from your neighbors.
Well, no, no, too late, dude. And so, like, it was just repeatedly these session, like, we have nativelands.ca on one of our episodes, and I think it's on the website. I'm not sure on that. If it's not, I'm going to get on PAGG about that. But basically, it shows like how many of the session maps just overlap one another and how confusing and utterly incompetent they were when making these treaties.
Yeah.
It is ridiculous how freaking cut up the United States was from these sessions. And then, like, there's not a single session for the 13 colonies. There were just the 13 colonies and stuff. You know, and so it's just like trying to understand the maps a little harder if you've never read any of the documents. So that's why I'm trying to put out the episodes and stuff. So you mentioned doing episodes and stuff. We're going to talk about our plans with Owen now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So as far as like that corporate thing goes, I'd love to do an episode on that more in depth. That's very like interesting to touch on because like, the idea of like a corporate face for a tribe is the corporation owned by white people or is it
no it's all run by Alaska Native people who can then like you know hire whoever they want as a CEO or whatever but I just recently had a friend elected to the board of directors for the corporation, which was a big deal to have, you know, somebody from my generation.
Yeah, I bet.
In there.
Is he like...
It's complicated.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. It's like the whole pipeline thing. It's like, oh, should we like shit on our tribal leaders for allowing a pipeline to go across the land? Or like if they are a part of making the deal, you know, a lot of times they're
right.
not a part of making the deal. It's mainly like... what's the term they used at the Frank Lemire Forum? Consultation as consension. That's what they normally do. They consult and they say they consented. Whereas it should be consent means consent. You know?
Yeah. I'm thinking about it and I'm like, man, it's conceivable that like somebody's listening from Alaska. Their grandfather worked on ANCSA or something like that. And like, I get it, you know, like I don't bear ill will or resentment to people who sign these things, you know. It's like the best that they felt they could get at the time. Well, and now we're here to fix it, you know, and make it better.
Or at least try.
Now that we have maybe we have more leverage than we had back then. I don't know. But just because it made sense then, it doesn't make sense now. And like that's the best that our ancestors could do when up against these voracious, you know,
bloodthirsty.
These, I wish there was a word to describe that kind of behavior.
Monstrous. Like, there's literally, without dehumanizing somebody, there's literally no accurate word.
I hear there's a word in French for that.
Oh, is there? Ooh.
Yeah.
We need to learn it. So
Sauvage.
Oh my God. All right. With that, I think that's a good spot to end the episode officially. Owen, I don't know. Do your people have like a traditional goodbye or?
I mean, I'm a language learner. I'm in classes right now. I've got one tonight. You know, as you know me, I'll just be getting better.
Yeah, go on.
Oh, I was just gonna say, you know, like one that managed to stick around on the land here, that never really went away, is our like thank you.
Okay.
And I do want to deliver this to you, which is Gunashish, which like, you know, people just use as thank you, but like the deeper literal like meaning of the word is without you, this would not be possible. And I really think that like, I really mean that when I say that to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for starting this and getting the ball rolling, and man,
honestly, that means a lot to hear. I've like the feedback and stuff is just great. Like, actually, you were one of the first people to hit us up about the feedback, and like that was just so meaningful to hear you say. Actually, I even mentioned in the last episode that it was a drink of fresh water.
Yeah.
But otherwise, thank you everybody for watching. Look forward to more Owen. Hopefully we're going to have him in on our next episode, which will be the history of AIM part 2, where we cover the Dawes Act, Fort Laramie Treaty. I believe I already said this in our last goodbye before the credit song. This is the official goodbye, and make sure to check out People's Liberation Podcast, Climate Liberation Podcast. I fucked that up. Bye. All right, we're done.
Good job.